former Channel 6 TV meteorologist Daryl Richeson with us right here. Let's test your microphone, Daryl. Does this work?
I think it does.
All right.
I can hear myself.
All right.
He has
left the bright lights and glamour of TV news. He works with Dr. Adnan Akyüz, the state climatologist at NDSU, a fellow who's a guest with us a few times a year.
Daryl Richeson, welcome to KFGO.
It's nice to be here.
It is really nice to see you. It's been a long time.
It has been.
Where did you come from? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a little small town in southern Minnesota called Elysian.
Really?
Yes.
What is it near?
It's between Mankato and Faribault.
Oh, so that's beautiful down there.
In the hearts of the southern Minnesota Lakes country.
Did you? So when you were growing up, did you want to be a broadcaster or did you want to be into science and weather and meteorology?
I loved meteorology, you know, ever since I can remember, probably even pre-kindergarten. You know, the reality is, I grew up in a small town. There's 350 people in this town. As I was a kid, it's a little bit bigger than that now. I really honestly didn't think someone from a small town like me could ever get on television. I mean, that's the truth because, you know, those are special people. You know,
sure.
That's something that would never happen to me. So I never really pursued it thinking that's an unattainable dream, which is silly to think, but that's the reality of growing up for me. I never thought I could do it. So I did.
So where you lived, did you grow up with people like Bud Crailing and the weathermen in Minneapolis, or was there TV stations around where you were?
You know, the joys of growing up where I grew up pre-cable is literally all the channels 2 through 13 at the time on VHF were all available to us because we had the Twin Cities. We could get the Rochester stations. We could get the Mason City, Iowa station. We could get the station in Austin, Albert Lee, and we could get the Mankato station.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, when the atmosphere was just right, we could even get the La Crosse, Wisconsin station, which was Channel 8 at the time. So our dial was full. So when we came home from school, we had multiple options of what to watch.
So what did you study growing up?
Growing up, you know, when I originally went into college, I went into earth science education. And so I really tried to become a junior high science teacher. Originally, I was born in 62, so you can do the math, folks. So that's towards the end of the baby boomers.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I graduated from college, student population was on the decline, and every teaching job on earth was taken by the baby boomers that were older than me.
Sure.
There were not a lot of teaching opportunities at the time. So after trying for a couple of school years to get a job, I could not. I did some long-term subbing, believe it or not. I had to fill my time with something. I went to grad school.
So how'd the TV gig come about?
Really, the TV gig came up, and not everyone probably knows this story, probably very few. Actually, to some degree, Tom Szymanski helped me get into the business. He was the meteorologist in Mankato at the time. Tom, a couple of other folks from the TV station came to the weather lab that I was in charge of at what was then called Mankato State University and heard me talk and just really thought I was a good BSer. And they needed someone that could do weather on the weekends very desperately. I had never been in a TV station outside of a tour when I was in first grade. I didn't really even know what a chroma keyboard is, if TV weather's done generally in front of a green or a blue screen. So they literally, Tom helped me go, here's some graphics, very primitive graphics. There's three sources. You know, now if you don't know what to say, you push a button and the next screen pops up and you start talking about that. So I had to try to figure out how to do these three segments, call for it subtly. They were recording it. It was terrible. I assumed, but they literally offered me the job after that one segment, and I turned them down.
Wow, Tom, you turned them down.
I turned them down.
Well, no wonder you were never going to get into TV when you were little.
True. You know, it's really, it was odd though, because it was a childhood dream of mine to do this, but at the same time, I was working on two graduate degrees at the same time at this point. One of the professors at the university, sadly, was diagnosed with cancer, and I was filling in for his classes, plus I was also had 20 hours to fulfill at the university for my graduate studies. So I was very busy at the time, and they only offered me $5 an hour
Wow.
to do this job. And so I'm thinking,
That much?
Yeah, that much.
Wow.
Which was, by the way, folks, above minimum wage, right, which was $4.85 at the time. So it kind of snapped my delusion of how much people in the media get paid.
Well, Daryl, it's not in the top 10 worst professions for a reason.
Daryl Richeson is with us. He is no longer on the tube, no longer on TV after 18 years with Channel 6, and he's working out there at NDSU with climatologist Dr. Adnan Acuse. So you, as a meteorologist, do you and Adnan scuffle quite a bit over climatology versus meteorology?
It's always a discussion, you know, who's more skillful, the person who predicts the future or someone who tells you what happened in the past.
And you know, doing what he does and what a meteorologist does is probably more difficult than it's ever been, even in light of the technology, because so many of the computer models do not reflect what's going on these days. You can't base it upon, quote, the norm.
I am always a very happy person that I got into weather before there was a lot of sophisticated computers. So I know I always spent my time, and still do actually, forecasting the old-fashioned way rather than just copying computer models. I always tell new people when they're learning to forecast that grabbing something off the internet and looking at raw computer data and then in turn projecting that as your forecast, I always call that plagiarism. Not forecasting.
Do you look out the window?
I never had a weather job where I had a window to look out of, believe it or not.
So how
and
do
I
you
notice you stick Terry Spees here in a non-windowless office, too.
Right,
it's
but he's got an internet screen in front of him. So how do you differ from the norm, so to speak? Why is it your forecasts are sometimes a little more, well, a little different?
You know, forecasting in a lot of ways is not only science, it's an art. And I think there's a lot of experience, common sense that comes into play, really a gut feeling. I always remind people that we're forecasting the future. And in the past, they used to burn people at the stake for forecasting the future and having such heresy. And we're expected to do it for a living and get it right. But I think there's a lot of truth to that. That, you know, it's a gut feeling, it's experience really comes into play. And I always appreciated that I did it for 25 years.
When I was a kid, and I remember this so very well, the first TV weatherman that I ever had an impression on, I lived in a little town called Firth, Idaho, population 322, and it's now maybe 400. And the weatherman on my local TV station was Barry Zevan, the weatherman. And I remember him because he was a real cut-up. Are you acquainted with him?
I also would probably say Barry Zevan is the first weather person I remember when he was in the Twin Cities growing up, also in a very small town. Jack, our backgrounds are too similar. That's scary. And he was probably one of the reasons as a kid I would like to be him someday. What a cool gig. You get paid to do that.
And as the decades went by, there came to be two kinds of weather people out there. People who were quite serious and scientific, and there were clowns. I think of one I can think of, Lloyd Lindsey Young and such. And where do you're never a clown on TV, but you always showed a good sense of humor. What's your style?
The thing about, you know, television and radio that you have to remember, and I think sometimes forget, is it is an entertainment medium. If you sit there and you're boring, no one's going to watch you. At the same time, I think there's a moral obligation to present the best information you have and inform people, but you don't necessarily have to do it in a boring way. And even in Fargo, North Dakota, we have days where the weather's not all that exciting and you can have a little bit more fun. I mean, nothing all that serious is happening today. And you guys know off air, I was teasing Terry and go, wow, why didn't he just say there's a small dog alert today rather than a wind advisory?
Well,
you can have a little fun with the weather here. We live in a crazy place. So I always thought of it as, yes, you have to have a little bit of personality, but at the same time, you also have to know when to be serious about it too, because weather sadly kills people.
He usually just talks about the temperature at different bars up and down the Red River Valley.
What do you think of TV's propensity to assign people to stand outside in storms to broadcast from the deluge? Blizzard.
I would always was one who leaned that I had no problems with you being outdoors delivering the weather if you did it all the time. But if you're only out there when it's really bad, then you're getting to the point of being a little bit silly that you're only, you know, demonstrating what everyone already knows. I mean, again, it does come down. There is a certain degree of entertainment, but then there's also a certain degree of, well, that's just ridiculous, or you could, you know, kind of silly in that degree. So it's a tough one to answer. I would never really wanted to be the person that was sitting on a beach and getting pummeled by sand in a hurricane. No. It's hard to say you shouldn't be out here, but I'm out here.
You know, the other thing that you, I think, possess is that warm feeling and that sort of comfortable feeling inviting you into people's homes. And I think that you have, I think TV people have that extra sort of burden, maybe, that you really have to have people like you.
Yeah, really much do.
I mean, personally, it's, like you.
Yes.
We like you.
Thank you. That's nice to know a couple of folks out there. But, you know, it's an interesting way, to be honest, to make a living. It really is. Until you do it for a while, it's a very unique job.
Can you, you want to hang around? I know it's your day off.
I was going to give you a hard time that I have this propensity to, when I did work at the other place, to work way too much on my days off. And then you called me to do it on yet another day off that I'm working. But yeah, I can hang around.
Do you ever hear or see anything of Kelly Stone? You two were such a wonderful pair to listen to in the mornings.
I appreciate that. I do. Kelly's in Bemidji, news director at Radio Group there in Bemidji right now. So, okay. Matter of fact, I was just over visiting with her about 3-4 weeks ago.
Yeah. We heard a few years ago she had a health problem. I hope that all got cleared up.
Sadly, it has not.
Oh, no.
But she's a fighter, so hoping for the best.
She's tougher than the average bear, Dean.
Yes, she is.
And we all really.
But yeah, she, speaking of memory lane, that she was always one of my all-time favorites. She is a very special lady.
How long did you guys do mornings together?
I think it was 7 years.
And didn't you guys sort of create that sort of local morning show gig thing?
She was really the second anchor I had. The first one was about 14, 15 months. So Kelly and I did a lot of that show together, yes.
And when you get up that early in the morning and when you're at work that early in the morning, I mean, anytime you have a partner like that, you create such a bond, I'm sure.
Oh, most definitely. And the funny thing is, you know, I would oftentimes comment to Kelly that, you know, I see you more than I see my wife. And there was a lot of truth to that through the years.
Well, our very best to her.
Let's get some calls in here. Dennis, you're on with Daryl Richeson.
Yes, Daryl, I'm sorry to see you going off the air because I really enjoyed watching you.
That was kind of you.
And I do have a question, though, being your Channel 6 and 8 were, you know, together. What happened to the 6 o'clock anchor, the guy recently?
Up at WDAZ?
Yeah. Where did he end up?
I do not know. That's the honest answer. He really didn't give any notice. He just sent in an email and said he's done. And I, from that point forward, I never looked into where he ended up. He didn't announce it to us or give us any details. I'm sure he's someplace. I just, you know, you get busy in life and I didn't hear in the first couple of weeks and you just, then I never really have looked it up. So I don't know where he went.
Thank you, Dennis. How about you, Dave? Daryl Richeson at your disposal.
Good morning, Daryl.
Good morning.
Say, you mentioned that you'd learned a lot from Tom Szymanski.
He taught me actually how to forecast a little bit and how to do TV. But I never was quite as crazy as him on the air.
What I'm wondering is, did he ever teach you how to climb a tree with a snowmobile?
We'll just ignore that one.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you, Dave.
The good news for me is I have not been on a snowmobile since I was about 20, so it's been 30 years for me. That's probably a good thing.
Worked with Daryl a certain period of time for about 1 year, and the one thing I learned is how often any weather person would defer to Daryl's opinion. They may not change their minds necessarily, but they always deferred in real life, in the hallways and out in real life. Say, well, yeah, if Daryl says it's freezing, it might freeze. And he just had a little different take on it. You kind of have a different take on the weather from the usuals.
That's probably a lot of truth to that. it goes back, you know, the beginning of the conversation. I think my forecasting techniques and the way I look at things are probably a little bit different. But, you know, my ultimate goal is always be the best forecaster out there. I am a very competitive person. And if you're going to do anything in life, do the best you can at it.
Did you ever look at the gallbladder of a pig like that one fell up in North Dakota did?
If that would make me a better forecaster, Jack, I literally probably would have, but I don't think it would have made me a better forecaster.
In your 18 years at Channel 6, we talked about you're working with Kelly Stone, but you worked with some very notable people, and off the top of my head, I think of Marv Bossert, for instance.
Marv was a gem of all gems. The work with Marv was so very special. And the first summer I was in Fargo-Moorhead was in 1996, and they were looking for me or somebody for several months. And John didn't necessarily, Wheeler, have a lot of time off. So that summer, he took quite a bit of time off. So I've spent a lot of that summer working the 6 and 10. There was no 5 at the time. And granted, Marv had his lake cabin and also took a lot of time off that summer, too. But when he wasn't there, I really got to work with him a lot then, the first 4 or 5 months I was there. And, you know, you're the new person. He's a legend. And even not being in this market until that point, I knew who Marv Bossert was. He's just one of those people in television. And the kindness and just joking with you instantly. There's just no one on earth was ever better than Marv Bossert. It was what a great man to work with. I always counted one of my great honors of coming to this city was the time I spent with Marv.
And Marv loved a good joke, and sometimes you guys would laugh a lot. And do you ever remember occasion where you'd start laughing, and sometimes for us that's disastrous because you can't pull it together? Did that ever happen to you guys?
You know, it's funny. I think just in my mind, and you're on television, you know, I certainly laughed on TV. I never really lost it in the sense where it got to a point of embarrassment.
Oh.
But there are times with Marv, I mean, you just laugh. The first winter I was here was the winter of 96, 97. And of course, the horrible flood the next spring, you know, and then went up in Grand Forks, all the snow we had that season. And Marv just coming into work with boots. Big giant snow boots on, putting his feet up on the desk, literally showing you his boots live on the air, what he had to wear today because of all the nasty weather, and, you know, kiddingly blaming you as the meteorologist. It's hard not to just sit there and laugh. And the nice thing was, Marv, I think, taught a lot of us that winter, and wished we still had him around for this winter, that winters are long here, and sometimes you just have to sit back and laugh at him. But again, he was just a gem.
We have another caller here. John, go ahead. You have the ear of Daryl Richeson.
Yes. Hi, Daryl. If I remember right, I didn't hear some of the earlier part. Maybe you already talked about this, but if I remember right, seeing you worked in the Sioux Falls market. And if so, did you ever get to know Dave Dedrick or work with Dave Dedrick?
I worked at a competing station with Dave. I did meet him several times while I was down there. Unlike this market, the media would get together more frequently down there. And so I did have the opportunity to meet him several times. Very nice man.
Thanks for calling.
Captain 11.
Yes, Captain 11. Speaking of a legend, I mean, he also was a legend of legends down there, too. Captain 11, his show, which he was still doing when I was down there, actually.
You know, you and I were talking off air, and I'll synopsize this. I know a fellow who was a TV weatherman a long time ago, and he still is. And coincidentally, a fellow who was the program director of a TV station in New York City saw him on local cable access while he was vacationing out there, and called him up and offered him a job, and he flew him away to New York City. And the next thing I know, I see him in the presidential suite at Yankee Stadium with George Steinbrenner and rubbing elbows with Richard Nixon and all of that kind of thing. A guy from nowhere goes to the big time. Ever get any offers like that, buddy?
You know, I did through the years get phone calls and offers. I was offered a job in Florida once, just right off the phone from the Weather Center. They had seen my tapes, had heard things about me, wanted to know, you know, come on down. You know, when could you begin with them? As everyone would probably guess by now, I did not accept that position because I stayed here. And there's a January or two here in Florida that I go, why did I take that job in Florida again? But it's one of the things I think a lot of people think about of the media. It's a special job in that sense, is you never know who's watching you, and you always do have that opportunity that, you know, sometimes you're only one phone call away from the big time, so to speak.
But this becomes home.
Oh, it does. And, you know, I've always loved living here, and I could not foresee myself leaving.
Wonderful. Well, we're glad. Well, and we're glad now we can talk to you and have you in the studio.
And you're right. You and I do have a similar upbringing. Come from a very small town and going into the same field and everything. And so we can get together. And
you're almost the same age.
No. He's much younger than me.
That was a nice compliment for Jack, by the way. So did you?
Hey,
you old Sandy one now. I'm just saying.
Dale, you're a real gentleman. And after working with you and watching you on Channel 6 for so long, we know you're a true professional. And meteorology and climatology is better because you're still in the field. Thank you, man.
That is very kind of you, and I hope to be back sometime.